Hi there, I'm Sean Kelly, the voice of the Gators, and welcome to the Gator Tales with Sean Kelly podcast. This is episode number 28. Glad you're with us. It's the last week of March. The basketball season has come to a close. The spring sports are shining here at Florida with track and field with a big weekend here at home, and all of the spring sports busy throughout these schedules over the next couple of weeks. One of those spring sports that's shining right now are the 10th-ranked Florida Gators softball team. And on the mound is a freshman from Indiana by the name of Keegan Rothrock. She's already in her freshman season, 14-3 as a starting pitcher. She also has a save, 112 strikeouts, just 33 walks. And that's through 104 1/3 innings pitched. Rothrock, a part of a very strong and young pitching group for head coach Tim Walton. For the first time, we get to hear her on this podcast, our first at-length interview with Keegan Rothrock on today's podcast. Also, spring football continues to work its way toward the Orange and Blue game on the 13th of April. I got to sit down this week with one of the all-time Florida football greats, the Cuban Comet. Carlos Alvarez is our guest today. Student, lawyer, activist, all-American, all-around fantastic person. And a new documentary, well, kind of new. It came out pre-COVID. It's getting a relaunch now to tell the story of the Cuban Comet, the Gator from North Miami, that immigrated from Cuba as a young person. So two uniquely different visits today. And of course, Kenna on campus. Kenna McGinnis is back. She'll get us up to speed on all that's been happening on the fields, the courts, and otherwise coming up a bit later. So let's get started, and we'll begin with Carlos Alvarez on this edition of the Gator Tales podcast with Sean Kelly. Gator Tales with Sean Kelly is presented by UF Health. UF Health has locations throughout Florida, including Gainesville, Jacksonville, St. Augustine, Leesburg, and the Villages, and we're growing. Compassionate care and world-class outcomes, that's our game plan. Visit ufhealth.org. to learn more. Our podcast is also brought to you by Pet Paradise. Gator fans, for pet fanatics like you, there's only one place who goes all out for your pet the way you do. Boarding, grooming, day camp, and veterinary services all in one convenient location. Pet Paradise and New Day Veterinary Care. Finally, complete pet health care is here for Gator Nation. In 1968, Carlos Alvarez arrived in Gainesville from North Miami, went on to become, of course, a student athlete and an All-American, a scholar who would go on to law school and a prominent career in law, teaching and practicing, and also as an activist. Carlos Alvarez is our guest today, and I couldn't be more honored to have the College Football Hall of Famer and all-time Florida great. Carlos, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you. It's always great to be here at the university. So it's really my pleasure.
Is it a welcome home for you to be back on campus?
It is, and because of the event that we may talk about a little bit, but yes, it is. It is a coming home, although I will say the campus has grown a little bit.
It still has some hallmarks, yes. Yeah,
but I mean, there's a few more buildings, including this one, but it's fun. It's fun to see the university grow, you know, continue the tradition for, you know, future generations.
The event that Carlos was referring to is the relaunch of a documentary, The Cuban Comet. Gaspar Gonzalez, Hammer and Nail Productions, ESPN, and the SEC Network put together this documentary a couple of years ago. And because of the COVID pandemic and other factors, a relaunch is most deserved and most welcomed. You had that last night, the relaunch of that documentary. You and former teammates and, of course, those who produced it. How was the event?
Fabulous. I mean, just fabulous. First of all, I got to give a shout out to Gaspar Gonzalez, who's also a Florida grad, and he's the one who directed and produced it. And we got to know each other. He called me out of the blue, and the whole project developed. But the amount of work that goes into something like that, it's amazing to me. At one point, Gaspar knew more about my life than I did. It was just very amazing. And last night was superb because a lot of my teammates showed up, we had a great time. You know, and the questions and answers going back and forth to certain things that happened during that time period, and being very thankful. that social media wasn't around, so we could get away with a lot of stuff. Really, the fabulous coaching and time here at the University of Florida, and what the University of Florida has done for us. Like you mentioned, I'm an attorney. I ended up going to Duke Law School and then teaching and practicing law. And our two captains in '69, one's an engineering professor at University of Michigan, and the other one is an orthodontist. Around the Lakeland area. I mean, superb guys, and I can name guy after guy after guy that have went from the University of Florida with a degree and been extremely successful in life.
So not just the super softs, the super smart softs from 1969.
Well, some of them were super seniors, but yes, yes. But you know, that super softs, which was the nickname that was given to basically mostly dealing with the offensive backfield, because the four of us that started were sophomores. And so the team got this, the super softs thing. But what people forget about the 69 team, we had an unbelievable senior class. I mean, we had an offensive line that was mostly seniors. We had a defense that was absolutely a great defense. Had two first round picks, Jack Youngblood, that I think the Gators would remember, Steve Tannen, number one draft choice for the Jets. I mean, we had a superb defense, a lot of them seniors. So it was really a super senior kind of a thing, but the super softs kind of stuck. But let me tell you, that's what a great team is all about. Those guys knew we were getting the publicity. They weren't. It was their last year. They should have been getting the publicity. You wouldn't, not even a slight bit of jealousy in the locker room. It was such a tight locker room, and those seniors were such leaders. And I can't speak more highly of anyone than those guys.
You mentioned that leadership. I heard a story not too long ago about Jack Youngblood and the quiet influence he had on the culture here with regard to the integration of the football team. You being a Cuban immigrant, obviously African-American athletes were making their way into the program during your time here as well. Youngblood, as it turns out, was one of those leaders that was trying to make those who felt unwelcome, welcome in the football program. Would you share that same thought about him?
Yes, I would share that. It's kind of an interesting situation. Of course, I'm Cuban by birth, and after I was 10 years old, I lived in Miami and then came up here. But the Gator teams back then used to be made up of North Florida guys, North Florida, South Georgia kind of guys. They were hunters and fishermen and stuff, and for a Cuban kid coming up here, it seemed unusual. And the 69 team was the last white team, all-white team, at the University of Florida. After that, as freshmen, and freshmen couldn't play back then, you had Willie Jackson and Leonard George that came in. So there was that trying to really integrate them into the team and for them to feel safe. And I will say, even though a lot of these North Florida guys may have had some biases, almost, I wouldn't say all, but almost all, the guys were so supportive of me, and I think Leonard and Willie would share that thought, even though they had a few rough things, but they were, share the feeling of, yes, we're a team, and we're here for each other.
Does that speak to the kind of individuals that those men were, or does it somewhat speak to the culture or the sport of football being a vehicle in that sense?
Perhaps all of that, okay. Perhaps as a little bit of all of that. I do think sports, football, as well as other sports, at its best, unites us. Because when you're, say, you're in the football field and somebody's tackling you, you're not thinking whether that person is Chinese, black, white, Hispanic. You're just thinking, how am I going to make this guy miss me? And it's an even playing field. I mean, that actually applies to that. It's an even playing field. And you get to know each other as equals. And so you carry that off the field. And that's the beauty of sports. And I think as fans, when you see it, you think of it that way. Because some people who say may have some prejudice against, say, African Americans, when they see him play, they have a better understanding of it and may relate to them a little bit better. So I think sports, at its best, in its best, has the power to unify us.
Who was the first to call you the Cuban Comet?
Well, that's been asked that question quite a bit. And it's a funny situation because anybody who knows my story knows that what I have said in the documentary, it notes it. I started playing football because I wanted to be an American, because I played baseball and I love baseball, but I thought football is the American sport. So because I looked slightly different, but I certainly talked a lot different, you know, with a heavy accent and all of that when I began. And actually, when I began, I didn't know any English whatsoever. How do you make yourself the same as the other kids? And so luckily, there was a boys club nearby the house that we were in. So I decided I played baseball, I played basketball, and then football season came around and all the kids were going to play football, and I said, well, I'm going to become an American. So I started to play. And so football for me was my ticket to America. So with all that said, my sophomore year, now I'm called the Cuban Comet. You know, so wait a minute, I'm trying to become an American with this sport, and call me the Cuban Comet. But something happens, I think, this is really about America. Something happens to you when you're a kid, you want to be an American. But by the time I'm 18 or 19, I'm proud to be Cuban, mm-hmm. and I'm prouder to be a Cuban American. And I think Italian Americans, you know, Irish Americans, we're all the same, you know, in the sense that that's the generation. And then you change and you go, no, I can be Cuban, but I can be American too. You become a Cuban American. So the fact that I was then called a Cuban Comet, I always found it very funny. But the way that went about was some newspaper reporter during the 69 season asked Norm Carlson, and there was a group of reporters, asked Norm Carlson, hey, does this guy have a nickname? And Norm, and I think everybody knows Norm Carlson is, you know, I mean, he's legendary in Florida, Florida history. And he said, no, not really. And some reporter from the pool said, how about the Cuban Comet? And Norm said, yeah, that sounds about right. And that became a Cuban Comet. It was some comment from the pool of newspaper reporter, but I've never been able to track down the person. And that's how I became the Cuban Comet. And, you know, I really have so enjoyed the nickname over time. But here's another little side story to that. My idol, my sports idol, was a baseball player, a Cuban baseball player, Minnie Mignoso. And Minnie got inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame, but he didn't have quite the statistics because for about a third of Minnie's career, he wasn't able to play Major League Baseball because he was black. And so eventually he gets in. You know, in the last 10 years, he gets in. But I was advocating for Minnie to get in to the Hall of Fame. But I find out that Minnie Mignoso's nickname, because he played for the White Sox in that area, the Cuban Comet.
How about that?
So I share with my idol, Minnie Mignoso, I share the nickname, the Cuban Comet, and to even have more, we're exactly the same, 5'11", 180. I mean, it was like unbelievable. My only sad part, I never got to meet him. His son contacted me when he found out I was advocating for him, and like when I made the College Football Hall of Fame, in my one of the acceptance speeches, I talked about Manny Mignoso and how I thought it was an injustice for him not to be in the Hall of Fame. So his son contacted me and thanked me, and you know, what can we do? And you know, we kept trying. I'm not saying I got him into the Hall of Fame. It was obviously, you know, a lot of effort by much more effort by a lot of people. But I'm so proud to share that nickname with him.
The nickname you eventually embraced. The one that felt uncomfortable at first. I do have to ask you, at some point in your life, did you have a license plate that said Comet, or did you do anything with the nickname in that sense?
I can't think of anything. I can't think of anything.
Carlos, you became an activist when you were here as a student athlete at Florida. How much of that activism carried on beyond your playing days and into your professional and your adult life?
It's always been there. It's always been there. The activism is really nothing more than doing the right thing. And I was taught that by my dad. I always get a little teary-eyed when I talk about him, but my dad, his example on every day of his life was do the right thing. And he did some things that would just amaze me. I'll give you an example about doing the right thing. Now, he never really spoke English real well, but I went to a junior high and a high school that was, there were a lot of fights after school, you know, kids just fighting. Back then you fought and you didn't have guns, so, but you know, there would be these fights. And my dad would come to pick me up, and he would see these fights. He would stop the car. Now there would be a group of kids, probably 30 or 40 around the fight and all of that. He would break through the fight, grab the two kids, separate them. He didn't even speak any English. And he would just say, go home, you know, go home. I mean, I thought these kids were big. I mean, he never said anything to me about it. I was embarrassed, you know, that he was doing that, because, you know, these kids were seeing me and my dad. But I was embarrassed. But ultimately, I realized what an incredible thing that he was teaching me. Do the right thing. Mm-hmm. And he was always about doing the right thing. So as things happen in life, my two brothers and my sister and me, I think we're committed to do the right thing. And really, because another factor is just the love of this country. You know, I think everybody needs to pull a little bit. And so I'm always for that. I haven't been perfect by any means, but I believe in doing the right thing.
In the documentary, it speaks of your father, that he was a lawyer in Cuba. After the family moves to Florida, he helps, and this is the story in the documentary, he helps you all kind of run the newspaper delivery business. Mm-hmm. There's not much more said beyond that about your father's life. Obviously, you just gave us an insight there. I am curious, was your role as an activist or doing the right thing what led you into a career in law, or was it the fact that your father himself was a lawyer at one time in Cuba?
I was so influenced by my dad that it was the fact that he was a lawyer. And both of my brothers are lawyers. One of my brothers has passed away, but both of my brothers are lawyers. So you know the influence that my dad had on us with that. My oldest brother was the CEO of one of the largest law firms in the world, let alone the United States. It's called Greenberg Traurig, and he went to law school here at University of Florida, part undergraduate, and then University of Florida Law School. And he went to he was also a finance graduate student and got a master's degree in finance. But Caesar grew that firm obviously with the help of a lot of other people. But as a CEO, when he started at that firm as an associate, there were 9 attorneys. They now have 1,400 and some attorneys, and they have offices all over the world. And Caesar took them with a great group of lawyers that were with him, Bob Traurig, Mel Greenberg, took him from a small firm to a huge conglomerate law firm that is highly, highly respected.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So that's, you know, so we were influenced by my dad quite a bit on that. And unfortunately, when I graduated, I went to Duke because of my knee injuries. I didn't go to play with Dallas that had drafted me. And after my first year, my dad had a sudden heart attack and died. But he got to see me play at Florida, which he loved. He went to every single game, you know, with my mom and my boys club coach, Rudy Freitas. They went to every game, you know, Mississippi, Tennessee, they'd be there, you know, and they went to every game. So he got to see that. And he got to see my two brothers graduate from law school. So just at the point that we were ready to give him back, he died. But he at least saw us really gain a foothold here in America, and he knew that the future was bright.
That was probably of great satisfaction and joy for him.
Yeah,
certainly.
It was.
When you think about time, time sometimes is a great editor
yes.
In some ways. The time since you were here as a student to the time you're now back here, decorated as you are, what's that feeling like?
In a way, it's a surreal kind of moment, you know. It's hard to believe 50 years have gone by. You know, it's just, how does that happen? All the memories that are here, not only when I played, but when I've come back and things have happened here. And always when I come to Gainesville, and I've come to Gainesville, not only, you know, football related, but legally related, you know, I've done work here. To me, it's, I don't know, I always feel very, like, welcomed here. Of course, living in Tallahassee, that makes it easy. When you go to Gainesville, it makes it feeling like you're welcome. But I always feel very welcome and at peace when I come to Gainesville. It's always amazing to me how the university has grown over time. Some of the facilities, like these kinds of facilities. And I'm happy. I'm happy that I see progress moving forward.
I think that's a great way for us to pause here, because I say pause, I would love to talk to you for hours. They won't allow me to do that in this format. Thank you so much. Welcome home, Carlos.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Keegan Rothrock and the Gators are coming off of a series sweep of the Kentucky Wildcats. They're in action this weekend in Starkville, Mississippi against Mississippi State. We'll get to that in a moment, but to end the series, I think it's win number 14 already for freshman Keegan Rothrock. How did that feel to sweep the visiting team for the first time in this ballpark in a couple of years?
It was a great feeling. I know it's our first sweep as a team this year. Of an SEC team, so it was really exciting for me and for the rest of my teammates to have our first SEC sweep, and for many more to come, hopefully.
And SEC pitching, how have you handled this now? You've had a couple of goes at it.
I definitely feel like this weekend was an improvement from the Alabama weekend. I don't think I was too sure of myself the first weekend of SEC play, just because I didn't really know what to expect. But coming into this weekend, I was definitely a lot more confident.
So what is it? What is it like?
It's definitely different from past games and even from the beginning of the season. But they scout you more. They have more on you. And especially the Friday and the Sunday game, they've already seen you once coming into it. And so I think it's just learning how to make the adjustment and also stick with what you do best.
So they've already seen you, yet you get a complete game on Sunday. And we finally saw a seven-inning game in this ballpark here for seemingly maybe the first time this year. How did you feel going that long for that outing?
Pretty good, actually. I felt like I still had everything working well. And just knowing that they have already seen me probably their eighth time through the lineup, just from Friday and Sunday, just knowing to hit my spots well and still work to my strengths.
The hype around you coming out of high school pretty strong. But here you are, 14-3. It seems like you've lived up to the preseason hype. Did you think about that? Did that weigh on you in any way?
I wouldn't. No, I don't think it did. Honestly, I don't think about those things a whole lot. I just try to stay in the moment and be with my teammates.
That's a good way to go about it. How many pitches do you throw?
That's an on-the-spot question. A couple different ones.
Your favorite being what?
All of them, honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what would be the out pitch then? I mean, what's your kind of like, I need this one pitch here, I want to throw this?
Honestly, it depends on the day. Like, I don't have a, like, I do, but I don't. Like, some days something's working better, some days something else is working better.
I don't know if you're kind of being vague with me here or making sure that your competitors don't figure this out, but, you know, to have that many pitches at your age, that seems remarkable. Was it hard to master that wide array of pitches?
Yes, I was actually not the best pitcher when I was younger, but it's taken a lot of work to just kind of get everything under my belt, and then especially through high school, I worked really hard to just make sure that everything was getting better every day, and even if it was a bad day, just making sure the next day after that was going to be better than the last.
All right, name these pitches for me. What different style of pitches are these?
rise, drop, curve, change, fastball.
Fastball. There you go. Did you have all of them coming out of high school, or did you learn one or two of these here getting to the collegiate level?
I did have all of them coming out of high school, but we have been working on drop and change and just making sure that I'm able to throw those in the mix when we need them.
So that was a skill that you had to develop to compete at what you did or did not expect about SEC play, correct?
Yeah, we've been working extra on those.
Working extra on those. Strikeouts come to you seemingly easy. Are you, again, I need to learn more about pitching in softball. Are there pitch-to-contact pitchers? Are there strikeout pitchers? What are the categories, and which one do you fit in?
Yeah, I'd say that those are the categories.
Okay.
Not
bad for me, huh? Baseball guy getting
yeah.
that?
Yeah.
So are you a pitch-to-contact or a strikeout specialist, I guess?
I would say I usually go for the strikeout, but especially when teams have seen me a couple more times, yes, I still want the strikeout, but I know they aren't going to be as likely.
You've already recorded like over 110 strikeouts. I mentioned the 14 wins. There's the ERA, the innings pitch, everything else. I think this is a long way to go, Keegan, but are you yourself in any way amazed by the production already for you?
Honestly, yeah. I was not sure what to expect coming in.
Did you study other pitchers, you know, ahead of you or that came before you to say, here are some benchmarks that I would like to hit? Was that ever in your mind or what you wanted to target here in your freshman year?
Yeah, I'd say so. I was always a Florida Gator fan growing up, especially softball, just because I played for the Indiana Gators. And so I was like, oh, Florida Gators are also Gators. So I watched Kelly Barnhill a lot.
A lot?
A lot when she was in school.
All right, so growing up, Whiteland, Indiana, and yet you were the Indiana Gators. Did that just happen to be the case? Were the colors the same even, orange and blue?
Yeah, I actually played for the Gators before I knew about the Florida Gators. And then when I was like eight, I told my mom, I was like, I want to be a Gator forever. And then looked up the colleges that had Gators as their mascot.
That's fantastic. See, when I first saw that, I thought, I bet you Keegan had them change her club team or whatever, your travel team, to Gators because either A, you were a fan or you knew you were coming here. It's completely in reverse. Mm-hmm. You walked into an existing Indiana Gators, which made you want to be a Florida Gator. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. They had already been around for probably like 20 years, at that point. They'd been around for a minute.
Tell me more about Whiteland, Indiana. Whereabouts in the state? What's it like growing up there?
It's about 20 to 30 minutes south of the 465 loop in Indianapolis. So kind of the suburbs. I grew up in a neighborhood that was surrounded by corn. My elementary was surrounded by corn. The high school I would have gone to also surrounded by corn. Kind of not a small town, but not also a big city. So like there was plenty to do around there, but backyard of the like the high school, there was corn. The high school I actually went to was closer to downtown. So that was actually right by the interstate. But I loved growing up where I did. I love all my friends from there, and I don't think I would choose to grow up anywhere else.
Do you like corn?
I do. I do.
What's your favorite way to consume corn?
Right off the cob.
Right off the cob. It's funny you say that, because I remember I was in Iowa one time, and I was with somebody on a road, and he was trying to tell me about the corn. And he said, I'll tell you what, he goes, it's so good here that we could pull over on the side of the road, grab an ear of corn, and eat it right now raw, and it would be the best corn you've ever had. I said, raw? And he goes, oh yeah, trust me. We did that. Was he right?
Yeah, we actually do that at my grandparents. They will like get corn because they're more surrounded by the fields than we are at home. They live more out in the country. So they'll get corn from the fields, they'll buy it, get it from the store, whatever, and then they'll bring it home and slice it off the cob, and then we have that for like our Thanksgiving dinners and our Christmas dinners, all that.
So you're missing it here in Gainesville because there's not as much corn, obviously.
A little bit, but usually it's more for like when we have our big family, like traditional dinners.
Okay. When mom comes to visit you here, watch you play, what do you make sure that she brings with her from Indiana for you?
Honestly, there isn't ever a lot that she brings down. She just brings a backpack and that's it.
I thought she'd bring corn. I was waiting for the finish there, that she would bring corn to you.
No.
No, not at all. What about high school basketball in Indiana? Did you, and I'm asking this because I just came from there with the men's basketball team, and I was reminded how much of that is in the fabric of that culture. Did you play basketball in Indiana on top of softball?
So my basketball career ended in first grade.
First grade?
First grade.
Oh, long career.
Yeah, kindergarten and first grade. I did not play after that just because I wanted to focus on softball.
Yeah.
But I had friends all growing up who played basketball in high school. I took pictures for basketball, okay, if that counts. But I would say it's definitely like an Indiana like culture. Like I feel like when people say Indiana, it's like, oh, the basketball.
Right. What do they say about Indiana softball?
I've heard that people are saying it's getting better. Oh. It's on the rise.
Well, then you would have to be a part of that. Yeah. But that would be, but I mean, again, Gatorade Player of the Year in Indiana, a state champ and all that. Maybe you're a part of that sports growth in the state of Indiana. That'd be something to hang on to.
That, and there are so many girls that I graduated with that graduated ahead of me that I feel like definitely contributed to that too.
Where did they go play softball after high school?
Our center fielder is actually at Virginia Tech right now. Also a freshman. There was a girl who went, actually Kelly Lynch, mm-hmm, is an Indiana coach right now. She went to North Carolina and I think played under Coach Dobbins, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. We've had a girl go to IU, and just a lot of the other like D1 schools that are in Indiana. But how many of us were there? I think there was 8 in my senior class and 7 of us went on to play softball somewhere.
That's a lot. That's a lot. No wonder you guys won the state championship. No, makes sense. Other than coming up and playing on the Indiana Gators, you wanted to be a Gator for life. What else was it about this place, the University of Florida, that had you sign that letter of intent?
Honestly, it was all of it. It was the coaching staff. It was the facilities, the schooling. Schooling was a big part for me because back when I had first committed, I wanted to be a dentist, I think. My mom's a dental assistant, so I was like, oh, I want to be a dentist too. So they weren't going to restrict me on what I could and couldn't major in. Granted, it's changed now and I'm majoring in psychology, but back then when I had first committed, that was a huge part of why I did.
We're glad you did too, by the way. If this goes by, you know, by normal course here, meaning 4 years, we're going to run up into the Olympics in 28 in Los Angeles. Softball will make its return to the Olympics then. The timing seems to be kind of just laid out perfectly for you. Is that a goal of yours, an aspiration to maybe pitch in the Olympics?
It is actually. It has been one of my life goals. I want to play for the Olympic team and be able to pitch in the Olympics and play for USA and represent our country.
How will you get ready for that? I know that seems somewhat far away. Trust me, as you get older, it'll come faster than you think. How does one kind of get yourself in that mindset to maybe go after a dream like that?
Just making sure that I'm still working hard now, keeping that in mind, but also making sure that I'm ready for what's ahead of me currently and just not getting too far ahead of myself.
Speaking of not getting too far ahead of yourself, as a freshman, what would be the perfect end of your freshman year?
Getting to the World Series. We'd love to win it, and I think we can win it. I feel like we have all the right pieces with the older players and the younger players, but right now we're just taking it one step at a time, and we want to get to the World Series.
You guys were picked to finish seventh in the SEC, and here you guys are roaring through the early portion of the schedule. Is this something you and your teammates talk about? Is it a chip on your shoulder in any way?
No, we don't really talk about any of the rankings, any of it, really. Yeah. We just have fun, do our thing, and play with each other, play for each other, and we just go out there and do our best.
Is that something that comes from leadership on this team? And if so, who are those teammates of yours that have really taken a hold of that leadership role?
I'd really say our seniors as a whole have done a really, really great job this year being leaders, especially for the younger girls.
And yet you're the freshman in the circle. Have they backed you in a way that you thought it might turn out to be? Or what's the dynamic between a veteran club like that all behind you, and you're the youngest, you're the newest, and you're the one touching the ball the most?
They have done a great job in keeping all the freshman pitchers in check, actually, and just guiding us and helping us through unknown territory, mm-hmm. in a way, just with us never playing college ball before and now being in the SEC. They have done a tremendous job in guiding us and helping us navigate the unknown waters.
Okay. With regard to what lies ahead now, when you get into an adverse situation, I'm sure they will come. What have you learned about getting right in the moment?
Just knowing that my defense is behind me and that it's not, like, the whole world isn't lying on my shoulders to get something right.
Okay.
Like, if I make a mistake, they're behind me. I can make a mistake. It's going to happen. But also just knowing what I do best and going after it just the same.
Let's give fans something that they can grab a hold of when they come and watch you pitch now. Is there anything that you do with regard to your routine? Is there anything that you wear or put on your face or anything else that is truly yours but yet tells some kind of a story that our fans may latch on to?
Well, I think everybody knows, but I wear the eye black with the glitter. I've done that for a couple years now. But I did find these sunflower earrings that it was the years Kelly Barnhill was here with, there was another pitcher here who had them too. And I actually messaged them. I was like, hey, like, where did you guys get your earrings? And they sent the link to me, and I've had those forever and pull them out on Saturdays when we wear our sunflowers.
When you wear your sunflowers. That is fantastic. Do you keep track of the record that you have when you wear those earrings?
No. No.
On a day that you're going to start, is there a particular meal or superstition that you've got?
So I actually wear my socks on the wrong feet on purpose. I've done it since my sophomore year of high school, after I threw a really good first high school game. I've done it in travel. I've done it the rest of high school. I've done it through college now.
So you have particular a right foot and a left foot sock. Any other day, they go on the proper foot, except for the days that you start.
Every day. Like, any softball sock I put on, it's opposite feet.
No matter whether you're starting on in the circle or not.
Yeah, no matter what.
Okay. This is a trend that I didn't expect to come out of this interview. Keegan, is there anything else that you would like our fans to know about you and your teammates that would help them even appreciate their play on the field even more?
Probably just that we have great team chemistry and that we all get along so well, and, like, especially off the field, we hang out all the time and we goof around all the time, and I think that's something that is important in a team, especially to play well, just to have fun together off the field in order to build on team chemistry. So I think that's just something important to note, because we all do get along so well, and I'd say we're all each other's greatest friends and greatest fans and supporters and cheerers and all that.
It shows both in the result and in the way you guys play. I've enjoyed watching you pitch so far. I'm grateful I'm going to get to watch you pitch for a long time. Keegan Rothrock, go Gators.
Go Gators.
Our last order of business, Kenna on Campus. Student worker Kenna McGinnis is back this week with a review of all that's been going on in Gators athletics.
Thanks, Sean. Let's get to it. Gators lacrosse added two high-scoring wins to their record this past week. 11th-ranked Florida started off conference play on the right foot on Saturday after beating Old Dominion 19-4. On Wednesday, they dominated over Liberty University 23-3. This matchup marked Florida's first win by more than 20 since 2018 and a new draw control record. Senior Liz Harrison now sits at the top of the program with 359 draw controls, 149 of which are from this season alone. I congratulated Liz after the game, and here's what she had to say.
It's been a goal for me for the past few years, and I've been able to kind of dial in on one aspect of the game and really find success there, so I'm really excited about it. I feel like the FOGO position is super new for women's lacrosse, so just kind of bringing awareness to it and, you know, teaching people that, you know, you might not stay on the field the whole time, but being able to specialize and own a position is just as important as scoring, and now with the FOGO, it's a bigger deal. So being recognized in the NCAA is really cool, and working on climbing it and staying number one.
Florida tennis had another weekend packed with SEC competition. The men's team split the results with a win over Ole Miss on Friday, 4-0, and a close loss to Mississippi State on Sunday, 4-3. Sunday's match was their first loss at home of the 2024 dual season, and the Gators now have a 3-5 record in conference play. Women's tennis came out of the weekend with two wins, however. They defeated Arkansas on Friday, 6-1, and Missouri on Sunday, 4-0. 12th-ranked Florida has a conference record of 6-2. Both Florida basketball seasons have officially come to an end after losses last week. The women's team closed out the year with a loss to St. John's, 79-60, in the first round of the Women's Basketball Invitation Tournament on Thursday. And in what ended as a close game, the men's team fell to Colorado on Friday, 102-100. Gator softball had a very successful weekend, sweeping their series against Kentucky. The 10th-ranked Gators beat the 23rd-ranked Wildcats 10-2 on Friday, 9-1 on Saturday, and 7-1 on Sunday. Number 6 Florida baseball brought home a series win over number 5 LSU this weekend as well. The scores read 6-1 LSU on Friday, 6-4 Florida on Saturday, and 12-2 Florida on Sunday. Unfortunately, the Gators fell to number 17 FSU on Tuesday in Jacksonville, 14-3. 4th-ranked Gators Gym finished 4th at the SEC Championship meet on Sunday. This marks Florida's lowest finish since 2005. Shifting the focus forward, the Gators are the number 4 overall seed for the 2024 NCAA Gymnastics Championships. This will be the first time Florida will host regional action since 2017. Diving into Gator swim news, Florida's women's swim finished the NCAA Championships in 3rd place last weekend. 12 Gators totaled 34 All-American honors en route to 3 national titles and 4 runner-ups. Florida's placement marks its best finish in 14 years. The men's NCAA swimming and diving championships began in Indianapolis on Wednesday. We look forward to seeing the Gators' results.
Gators track and field came out of the FSU relays last weekend with 12 top 3 finishes. On Friday, Will Gross IV landed himself at number 6 on Florida's all-time top 10 list in the men's hammer throw. Abraham Sargent made quite the debut for himself as a Gator, recording the number 5 mark on Florida's all-time top 10 javelin throw list. Plus, 15 Gators earned personal records. That's all on Gators results. This has been Kenna on Campus. I'm Kenna McGinnis.
Thank you, Kenna. And with that, a wrap on episode number 28. Huge thanks to Hall of Famer Carlos Alvarez, Gators freshman Keegan Rothrock, Kenna McGinnis as well. And as always, a big thanks to our sponsors, UF Health and Pet Paradise. Please, if you don't mind, hit that subscribe button. And of course, we'd love to get a review of this podcast from you. Help us get better as we progress through this first season with me hosting the Gator Tales podcast. Thanks, as always, for allowing us to be a part of your Gator Week. We'll see you at the ballpark or at the track, perhaps even this weekend. Until next time, I'm Sean Kelly, and as always, go Gators!